You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
It's Monday. We're at Hendox because it's time for the Massive Report podcast, brought to you by 180 Property Development for their sponsorship of the Massive Report podcast. We appreciate it so much. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects to build the podcast on your Columbus crew of our dreams. We have Bart Logan. Hi, Bart.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
I'm good. Alex Stanek.
How's it going?
I'm good. And Sam Fahmy is with us as well.
What's up?
And Sam, you're always here anyway, but you're pressing buttons. But today you've given yourself a microphone, so we expect some incendiary opinions at some point. Do you have them? Okay, let's get into it. I'm Brian Phillips. I work at CD1025 Radio. If you get a chance, check us out at CD1025 and CD1025.com, and I thank you. Well, we'll get into it later, but in a week when MLS was like, look at all the goals, it's the new MLS. Nothing but goals and no defense. Crew 1, Dallas 0. And it's 2 points and leaves us tied the top of the table in the Eastern Conference. And I don't think the score really tells the tale again, just like last week, because I wasn't particularly impressed overall with the way it looked against New England. But especially in the first half, I was very impressed with what I saw from Columbus Crew, though they only got the one goal. What did we correct from 1 week to the next, Alex?
I think the passing was just crisper. The players kind of knew where they were a lot more. We were able to maintain possession, which was something that I think we struggled with in the previous game. We played a really good Dallas team, but we were just a more put-together team. I think that they're starting to understand what Porter is trying to do a little bit more. I think players are more on the same page. I thought Francis had a better game than he had in the first game. And I thought Federico Higuain did as well. There were a number of points during that game where you saw them try basically the same thing that we saw in previous games, where they would just press the hell out of Higuain, mm-hmm. And he would get around it. That was something that was really impressive to me. You'd see two guys go at him. He would just kind of work around and then play the ball. Overall, I thought it was a great game. I'm sure we're going to talk about Gaston Sauro. Maybe the best defensive performance I've seen from a Crew player since the Chad Marshall era.
Yep.
I thought he was incredible. Stefan had a great game. The whole team played really well, with the exception of a couple players. But
we'll overall, get to those. We'll hand out our grades. I know Ralph isn't here to give his low scores, but we'll see what you guys think. Of course, Gaston and Zach Stefan were part of the league's top 11.
Yep.
For the weekend, so that tells you something as well. Bart, Alex mentioned that he was beginning to see what Caleb Porter was trying to do with this team, put his own stamp on it. What are maybe one or two things that you saw in the game that are examples of the stamp he's trying to put on this club?
Well, I think the first stamp is the starting 11 coming out there and putting Robinho in ahead of Justin Miram. And you look at this Crew team under Caleb Porter. I don't know if Greg Berhalter certainly would have been so quick to, you know, to flip the switch there with a new player. I don't know if that's, you know, more indicative of Greg's kind of, you know, resilience or loyalty to him. And I don't know if this should be, you know, looked at as Caleb Porter really being, you know, quick to make the move versus, you know, Caleb Porter not really necessarily having any of the allegiances, because this isn't really his team, or
right.
He's still trying to. So, but to see, you know, after 2 weeks, and granted, Justin Miram hasn't looked that great, but, you know, to be willing to go to do that when you've still gotten 4 points out of those first six games, or 6 points, rather, out of those two games. But to get that, and Robinho, immediate impact. You looked at the way he was able to move the ball, really the interchange between him and that entire front four as well, with Pedro Sanchez, who put in another very sterling performance. You know, probably his best run of a couple games in black and gold since coming over. Assists in both games, but also just an impact player all over. You know, he had a good opportunity that was created by Robinho in that first half as well. well. You look at just the way all that entire front four was moving, really created the chances, and even in a game that was, you know, just 1-0, that were not for, you know, a couple of big saves from Zach Steffen early in the second, you know, could very easily have been a draw game. But it was a team that, even though I think the possession numbers eventually actually did favor your crew, had, I think it was like they were down 40-55 from Dallas, but they took their chances. And I thought that was an interesting thing Caleb Porter was talking about, where they did want to kind of counter, and they weren't necessary. Although he wants to possess the ball in general, he's going to pick his opportunities and his opponents. And they saw something in Dallas, and they were able to capitalize.
Well, I think, Sam, wouldn't you say that that's also perhaps an artifact of being at home? You're going to want to – I don't know how much coaches think about that sort of thing, but it seems to me in years of watching this game – that they're more cognizant of trying to entertain the home fans than maybe they would be on the road, and perhaps take a few more chances?
It's always like one of those situations where the coaching mantra is 3 points at home, 1 point on the road, right? And I don't think that was really, and maybe intentionally, what Caleb was going for, but it was very one of those, just go out and play. And what I like from what I've seen so far in three games is that you're seeing different improvements from game to game, and that is really important in how you look at this, how this season becomes overall. You didn't just have a guy who you don't expect scoring for you, but you also have that same guy being in beast mode with his counterpart center back and really locking down the defense. There was a period of probably about 5 or 6 minutes there towards the end of the game where Dallas was really, 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 really pressing and trying to take shots. And in previous crew teams, and I think this will eventually also happen, previous crew teams would have let a goal in during that time. But what we saw on Saturday is that, no, they stood tall. They knew when to clear the ball. They knew when to play it out of the back. They knew they were able to maintain their markings and not lose their focus. And I think that's really, really important. That might be more important throughout this season than maybe anything else that Caleb Porter does.
Well, if he was sitting here right now, I would ask him if what part of the club he felt that he knew what he had. And I would guess that he would tell us the back and his goalkeeping. It seems to me, and I think it's a great plan to, if when in doubt, make sure that you're stout in the back and that you're taking care of that end of the game first. It's so important. And you don't want to have to think about the way the defense plays very much, because obviously if the goals aren't being allowed, you're doing your job. And I just can't really think of a whole lot to ding those guys on, especially since they're given freedom / responsibility to get up the field and join the attack at certain times, but they're still taking care of their business back there.
Well, I think it's not just the back, but he's got a spine to this team, uh-huh, just down the middle, because you also look at one of the reasons that, especially on the wings, that Harrison Offal and now we're seeing Wyland Francis again are able to move up is because you've got such reliable defensive midfielders in Will Trapp and Artur, and then them giving that flexibility. They all seem to be really building off of each other, and I mean, but to the point, Gaston Sauro and Jonathan Mensah right now, I mean, as good a pairing as there is in MLS.
They are just on the same wavelength 100%. They know exactly where each other are at any time. You see one of those guys, I was in Nordeca, and somebody kind of grabbed my shoulder when Mensah went down and Gaston was the only center back, and it was basically one-on-one, and I just kind of went like this and kind of waved and said, no, it's fine, he's got it. And he did. He cleared it.
Yeah.
These guys are just, they slot over when they need to. They swing to the wings when they need to. The awareness that they have with each other and with the rest of that back line is really invaluable. And if everybody stays healthy and everybody stays on the same page this way, it's going to be a huge benefit. I don't know how many goals we're going to let in this season. It really buys us a lot of space in the front end.
I remember thinking over the course of Sorrow's time with the team and wishing he was healthy enough to play, and then wondering, well, why is he still here if he's not able to play? Now we know why.
Yep.
Now we know why they stuck with him and were patient and let him get healthy. I mean, I remember his first game. It was moments into the game, and he knocked heads with Will Trapp, and he was out with a concussion. Yep. And then it was the knee problem, and it was almost like a bad omen.
Yeah.
And to see him healthy and with a smile on his face, and we'll have, when we grade the players, we'll have some fun comments from Gaston Sorrow. He's having a great time.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
the thing that we need to be mindful of as well. I think it's important for the players to be having fun. And when you're winning, you're having fun. And you see the smiles and the pulling for one another. And I think the guys are sort of like, they're going to take this as a theme in the season. How many goals can we get for Gaston?
Yeah.
There's no award that we can determine for the MLS highest scoring defender, but maybe we should invent one here, and we could have a ceremony here at Hendox and give it to Gaston.
The golden boot. Let's just give him the real thing.
Yeah.
When right at the beginning of the game, one of my fellow photographers is sitting right next to me, and I said, we got the corner, and I'm like, oh, man, it would be funny if Gaston scores. And lo and behold, Gaston scores. Yeah. And I'm like, what is going on? And it's like, you know what? At work, I wear a badge to get into the doors and stuff like that. And I recently changed my actually, in preseason, when the team was officially saved, I changed my lanyard to my MLS Cup lanyard. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to ride this, and I hope that it's a good omen for what we see. But, man, what we're seeing, this, you know, this entire left side of the defense has not played together in well over a year, two years. They have not played actually really at all. So now you have two sides that are starting to figure out each other way earlier in the season than we're used to, and that's a good thing for the points that we get now looking further in a compressed season.
Yeah, and I expect the team to play with a lot more flair going forward. The goals are going to start going in numbers. And maybe this Saturday in Philadelphia, though, we'll talk about that as well. We're going to have a different lineup by necessity because of national team duties. But I look at it as a positive, and we'll get to this a little bit later. But to see some other faces against a struggling Philadelphia team, I think is a positive. And some guys are going to have an opportunity to step forward and let the new manager know that they're there and they're worthy of minutes. So we'll find out how that all goes. The corner kick, we cannot forget the quality of that short post corner, that near post corner kick. Sorrow, that's hard to do, you know, to direct a ball that's spinning towards the goal off the top of your head into the back of the net, but somebody has to put it there, and that was a great ball by Santos.
It really was, and he has been celebrating that on social media, and I think really kind of enjoying it, and he should. You know, he is someone who has gotten a lot of stick from Crew fans recently, and I think that he had tough games, but I also think that he was a little bit a victim of the system that Berhalter played. He was not meant to be a goal scorer. He was not necessarily even given the freedom just to take the shot whenever he felt like it. And Caleb Porter said in preseason, I want you to take this shot. I want you to push up. And he's almost taking a little bit of the same role that Justin Merrim had, given the same sort of freedoms that Merrim had last season, this season. And I think he's really kind of owning it. The celebration, if you haven't had a chance to look at Sam's photos from the game on MassiveReport.com.
And Ralph.
And Ralph's photos. They are great, and the faces on the players in that celebration speak volumes about the unity that this team has in that locker room. They were so happy for Pedro. They were so happy for Gaston. Just mile-wide smiles on everybody's faces. Higuain was loving it and, like, ruffling his hair in one of the shots, and Mensah was, like, kind of jumping on Gaston's back a little bit. It's just, this team is so unified, and really, really enjoying it. And, you know, it's a great way to get the season started, and hopefully they can keep it going.
Well, it's a far cry from a few years back when we had Kai Kamara stealing the ball so he could take the penalty kick.
Yeah.
And that's poison, and I don't see any of that poison on this club. And that's important. It's a long season. They spend a lot of time together, and you can't have that garbage, and I don't see any of it. So that's a credit to the guys in the locker room and the coach. I think we're off to a great start when so many changes were made.
There's also something to be said about Caleb Porter's relationship with these players. In the beginning of the season, he emphasized how much time he had tried to spend in getting to know these players one-on-one as people, not just as his players. And you could see in how the players reacted also to him after the game. And I, you know, Caleb is kind of a fiery guy, but this last Saturday was the first time I've seen him like really, really, really fired up when he came to the Nordic, and he was just like all for it. And it was, and I think, and you can sense that crowd interaction with him, and it was just, it was good to see. Not that, you know, Greg always interacted with the team, but Greg is more reserved, and maybe once or twice in the last few years has he really kind of like fist pumped the crowd, and I don't see him doing that. Yeah, but it was, this was good to see. It's like, you know what? I like seeing this. I want to see more of this, and I hope that this is one of those seasons where we see a lot of this.
Well, it's off to a great start. We're happy to be top the table with DC United. We'll get into what they did this past weekend when we go over the full slate of games from Saturday and Sunday as well. Some interesting results, including, and I drove by the sign this weekend on the way to my daughter's game on Sunday, against FC Cincinnati, 0-0 draw. My daughter, in my mind, gets a 10. I'm sure Ralph would give her a 6. But she played great as a center back. And 0-0 tie against Cincinnati. And sort of a precursor to the actual Hell is Real. It was her club against this FC Cincinnati down there at Little Miami High School. And it was great on St. Patrick's Day as the game kicked off. It was snowing like a son of a gun. I'm like, spring soccer, yay. All right, I'll tell you what, fellas, how about we take a break, we come back, we grade the players, and we look around the league as we continue on the Massive Report from Hendox on a Monday.
Congratulations on another goal.
Yeah, thank you. I'm used to now. I'm so happy because this time helped to the team to win. And I think we need it because it's the first home win, and we are happy.
Are the rumors true? Are you going to move to forward?
Sorry?
I said, are the rumors true? Are you going to move to forward, take Jossie's position?
Yeah. Now I tie to him in the leader score, you know? And I'm happy that we can win at home. And I hope we can do also in the next game a good job.
Gaston Soro with Neil Sika, courtesy Sports Time Ohio, after the match. Very happy Gaston.
Isn't that awesome? This whole thing is so crazy. This is a player that Dr. Pete basically saved his career, and he's playing for the team that Dr. Pete saved. So you got the player Dr. Pete saved playing for the team Dr. Pete saved. It's pretty wild.
He must be protected at all costs.
Absolutely. Yes.
At all costs.
Bubble wrap after the match. Carefully place him in the back of the van and take him home. Relax. Have a couple of pops.
Mm-hmm.
You're ready for the next one. All right, we are the Massive Report from Hendox here every Monday. You know, you can come down and watch us if you want. You just can't play pool while we're recording.
You might even get to participate.
Sure. You know, we got a lot of microphones. You never know. Come down and see us. Buy us a beer. Or maybe we'll buy you a beer. You never know. Miracles never cease. Nick Hudak from the Massive Report gives out grades every week, and he gave out his grades, but I want to see how much they match with our panel here, Alex, Bart, and Sam. We'll start with you, Alex, and we'll start with Zach Steffen.
Oh, man. I'm going to say 7.5.
I'll give, I'm going with Nick on this one. I like the 8. Made a couple nice saves when he needed him to do it, and can't complain. Clean sheet.
I'm going to give him a 9 just because of the fact that he was playing hurt.
That's true. We learned that later.
Okay. Elaborate on the injury for those not familiar.
So apparently this has been something that's been going on for a little while, but it seems that Zach has a minor knee twinge. And if you are familiar with any sort of knee injuries, a knee twinge could be anything from, you know, it's just sore, to the weather is changing and my knee just hurts, to something more serious. We don't think it's anything serious.
Is he going to play with the national team then in this call-up?
He is not playing with the national team. He is not reporting to national team camp. And according to the reporter from the Dispatch, which I am now forgetting. Jacob, thank you. Sorry, Jacob. According to Jacob Myers, he will probably miss the Philadelphia game. I mean, he was going to miss the Philadelphia game anyway, but this is now more confirmation. It's precautionary. Nothing bad. If he absolutely had to play, I'm... guessing he probably would, but they're just being cautious.
I'll tell you who's freaking out right now. It's Manchester City. But that's not
I'm sure they're kept abreast of the situation.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I'm not going to lose any sleep over what they think about it. I just want to keep him. Is that selfish? Probably.
They already paid for him, so buyers keepers, I guess.
Right. Harrison Offal.
I'm going to say six.
I'll go with 6.5 for King.
I'm going to go with 6 only because, well, I'll give him 6.5. And the reason I give him a half is because he had an opportunity to shoot and he was nice and open. And I think he decided to lay it off to Pedro, which I thought was weird. But no, 6.5.
I think if there's one thing this team could do more of, and that's and you talk to kids about this when you're coaching them, don't pass up a good opportunity looking for the great opportunity, a goal that never comes. And that's one thing that I think this team could embrace, and I'm sure they will, be a little more selfish, shoot the ball.
Be like Gaston.
Shoot, yeah. be like world-class scorer Gaston Sorrow and shoot the dang ball. Shoot it, put it on frame. And not over the top. We'll get to him here in a moment. But Nick had Harrison at a 6 and Stefan at an 8, and we're at Mensa.
I'm going to give him a 7.5. I think he had a very good game. There was I need to go back and watch the replay, but there was a challenge he made in the box in the first half. I think it was in the first half that I thought for sure they were going to call as a penalty. But they did not. But if that had been a penalty, I would have definitely seriously deducted points from his score, so I'm going to say 7.5.
So I'll go, you know, on the other end, I'll say an 8.5 for Jonathan Mensah in there. He also, you know, he had some of the most important headers in the box, and in that case, it was in the waning minutes of the second, but a couple really great clearances from him, and he and Gaston Sorrow just putting together really complementary skill sets, and I thought just a pretty solid performance. But you know, if he had gotten that penalty in that case, you know, go down, but otherwise still had a clean sheet, and he's given up one goal in 3 performances.
I'm gonna give him an 8, but that was the cleanest shoulder tackle that you could have ever, like, that was as clean of a legal shoulder as you could ever get as a clean of a legal shoulder. And yes, it would, if they would have called a penalty on that, it would have been a horrible call. But that was a clean, clean, clean tackle. I think he had one point in the second half where he was trying to clear a ball and he just didn't clear it far enough. That worries me a little bit, but considering how they performed under pressure for those 5, 7, 10 minutes maybe, no, I'll give him an 8 for sure.
And Nick gave him an 8 as well on MassiveReport.com. I almost want to save him to the end because there's been so much love for Gaston Sorrow, but kind of working our way from the back to the front. Gaston.
So I'm only debating a half a point here. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to give him the 10.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm going to give him the 10. I said earlier in the podcast, this was the best defensive performance that I can remember since Chad Marshall. And I mean that. I thought he was all over the place. There were moments where I thought we were totally screwed and he would come out of nowhere and clear the ball. I was not seeing him and he just darted in there and made a great tackle. Even if he didn't score the goal, I think I would have given him like an 8.5. But all then right. He scores the winning goal, and he is tied for our top goal scorer. 10.
So are you going to give any more 10s this year, you think? Because that's the most we can give.
It depends on how many more games Gaston has like
okay,
that, I guess.
All right,
I I'm not sure anybody else can do it, but maybe Gaston can.
Do you have a Gaston jersey?
I do, actually.
All right, wear it next week.
Yep. I don't have a game jersey, but at the gear sale his first season, I got one of his training shirts with the 22 on the front and Sorrow 22 on the back. The gray ones. I don't know if you guys remember those from a few years back. Got one of those. So,
right on.
Yeah,
I'll wear it next week.
I will.
All right. Bart, Sorrow?
Yep, perfect 10. Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, you and I've given another 10 already so far, but I mean, you just... I think there's the everything he did defensively as well as Alex pointed out, and obviously there's the goal that captures the headlines, but you look at some of the balls that he's playing, you know, just, I mean, great long balls down the sidelines to find Pedro, just everywhere he manages to make an impact everywhere when he gets
up in front in the game. He gets back quickly, and he's just such a buoyant personality that you can't help but cheer for him while you're watching him. And absolutely 10.
Well, and there's also this narrative thing with Sorrow that I think is kind of in the back of my mind, at least, this, you know, player who kind of came back from the dead playing for the team that came back from mm-hmm. the dead. And I love seeing him succeed because he almost represents to me this new Pete Edwards team and this new crew that we've got and this, you know, Phoenix team. And I just love that he's playing the way he is, and I hope it'll continue all season.
Well, it's mm-hmm. fun because for me, because I didn't go into the season thinking that Gaston Sorrow was going to be the guy that we're talking about, that I'm talking to other fans about. Mm-hmm. Just I did not see that coming, and that's what's fun about sports is these stories that pop up. Sam, you got to give Sorrow a 10 here, I guess.
I don't give 10s.
Come on, Sam. You wanted 2 goals? Come on.
Yeah, what exactly.
I'm not going to give him a 10. There's a reason behind the madness. I'm not going to give him a 10. I'm going to give him a 12.
Oh, there we go.
Not even 11. He just skipped 11, went to 12.
He gets a 10 for his play, for just his regular play this season. He gets an extra 1 for his goal. He gets an extra 1
for
more.
That smile?
No, for the fact that he didn't get hurt. Okay. He stabbed at a couple of balls, like, that he had no business stabbing his injured, recovered, reconstructed knee at. And he stabbed it with so much confidence to clear the ball. Like, my heart almost stopped going, oh my gosh, no, we cannot lose this guy now. And no, so I'm going to give him a 12. And right. Don't at me. Whatever.
Is that something that Caleb Porter would mention to him, that maybe he needs to not be so aggressive in those particular instances? Or
well, maybe the team owner would address that with him when you're like, I don't really want to work on this anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I'd rather just own the team and not keep doing knee surgeries.
I think, though, to the same point, though, you don't want – like, that's such a concern with players, especially when they're coming back from a serious injury, and that's always in the back of their mind. Yeah. And, you know, you can look at guys, I mean, as Blue Jackets fans, you can look at Alex Wenberg after he had his concussion, and he hasn't, frankly, been the same player. There's that hesitancy. He's afraid. And so to not see that fear from Gaston, I mean, prayers up, like, don't want anything to happen, but I don't want him to change a thing right now or even be thinking about that. If he's over it, he knows his body better than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fair enough.
And sometimes you'll see players who will kind of half go in on things when their brain says go in for it, but then at the last second mm-hmm. they hesitate. And sometimes that's way more dangerous than just playing your normal game.
Yeah.
It seems like Dr. Pete's got him back. I mean, he had a 2-year recovery period. And he's playing lights out, so knock on wood, because we need Gaston, and that's a kind of a thing that I didn't expect to say beginning of the season, but he's been our MVP so far this year.
And to be fair, like, I mean, yes, we need Gaston. We need Gaston in his current form.
Yeah.
This team is not lacking in center back depth. That's true. You have Lalas Abubakar, and you have
Josh Williams,
Dreamy Eyes Josh Williams, and you have you even have Buba, the other Abubakar, who's mm-hmm. on loan right now. All at least 2 out of those 3 are proven commodities.
You could
in
bring
this
back
league.
Crenali too if you want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, you have Crenali. I mean, these are all deep guys there. That have Major League Soccer experience and that can be starters on other teams. This is how much depth we have at center back at this point.
And that's not a bad thing. And I don't think we're going to have any other 10s here, but we'll see. Waylon Francis.
I'm going to give him a 6. I thought he's been improving. I still think that he has more work to do to kind of fully gel in with the team, but he's getting there pretty quickly, and I love the work rate that I see from him.
I'll go with a 7, just like the way that he, you know, kind of immediately seemed to establish a degree of chemistry on the right side with Robinho. And, you know, I think it is coming, and hopefully if we can get him to replicate some of the form he had in 2014 and 2015, I mean, this would be – it doesn't make up for Milton Valenzuela, but, boy, it makes that loss a lot easier to stomach.
I'm going to go right down the middle. I'll say 6.5. And – actually, part of it is because of what you just said, Bart, mm-hmm. is that I felt that there was some hesitation between him and
Robinho.
See, I'm totally forgetting things today. I don't know what the deal is. I'm getting old. But I thought there was a lot of hesitation between him and Robinho, especially in the second half. But, you know, I I'm seeing this improvement. So maybe when they have the other winger that's playing, the midfielder that's playing next to him, they give him a couple more games, which they probably will with Justin being on international call this week. You know, so maybe that will help the chemistry. I think this would be a I just want to continue to see improvement. I think he's good defensively. I think it's just that offensive part that's still not there.
Yeah, definitely that final third.
Francis got a 7 from Nick on MassiveReport.com. Sorrow did not get a 10 from Nick, so you'll have to take it up with him. He got an 8.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yep.
Artur.
I'm gonna say 6.5. I thought he had a good game. I don't think he's in the kind of form that he found midway through last season, but I think he's getting there. He's got a different role to play, I think, in Porter's system. Him and Trapp, I think, are slightly kind of being tweaked a little bit by Porter. So I think he's still adjusting to that. I thought he lost possession a little bit too much in this game, but otherwise I thought he had a good shift. And I'm very happy he's in the starting 11.
Yeah, I'll go with a 6 for Artur. You know, he's still managed. They kept the clean sheet, and I think just for that, you get the boost.
I'm going to go with a 5. I don't know, man, something is going on, because the last couple of games when he gets the ball in his feet, he looks like he doesn't know what to do with it. And I don't know if that's, you know, adjusting to instruction from Caleb, or is that, you know, adjusting to just everything else. I don't know. What does he have to adjust to? Everybody around him is fairly the same. So, I don't know. He doesn't feel nearly as crisp as he used to be. No, I'm sticking with a 5.
5 from Nick as well. Will Trapp didn't get a good grade from Nick either. We'll see what you guys give.
I'm going to give him a 6.5 again. I thought that he did all right. They were really pressing in the midfield this game, and that made Artur's job difficult. It made Higuain's job difficult. It made Will Trapp's job very difficult. I thought he coped better than Artur did. I thought he coped worse than Higuain did. He struggled at times. If you have two guys on you and you don't have a whole lot of room to pass, sometimes you're going to lose that ball. But I thought overall he did all right. I thought that he was really important, especially in the last 10 to 20 minutes when Dallas was really pressing, and he basically dropped back and helped provide cover right at the top of the 18-yard box, prevented those shots. So I'm going to give him a 6.5.
Yeah, I'll go 6 for Will. Again, you know, a pretty solid performance. And, you know, yes, there's the giveaway earlier, but he also, you know, was able to move the ball out of trouble more cases than not, had a good gut recovery. And, 6 is good for Will.
I'll go with the same. Not much to add.
Only a 5 from Nick for Will Trapp, which we're not used to. I think you guys are on to something, that perhaps Trapp and Artur have more adjusting to make than perhaps the rest of the guys, which is ironic since Will played for Caleb Porter at Akron, but, you know, he was a college kid then. The game's different than the professional game. And I don't think it's anything to really worry about too much. It's just finding what the coach wants, and I think they're still in the process of doing that. Santos with the assist. How about a grade?
I'm gonna go 7.5. I thought he had a very. I'm gonna say a 7. Okay. I thought he had a good performance. He's getting better. I still don't think he is necessarily earning DP money, but he had that perfect corner kick that got the goal.
It was a thing of beauty
that got the win. So I mean, I'm gonna give him a 7. He is improving at a rate that is solid. I think by midseason we're going to see a different player than what we saw last year, but he's not there yet.
I'll go with an 8, and I think I'm grading on the Sanch curve again, although if he puts in a couple more performances like this, he might just be able to get graded with everyone else. But, I mean, you look at some of the things, you know, he had a couple good shots that he generated, shots again that I think we've touched on already that you just didn't see last year under Greg Berhalter. Now, he hasn't capitalized on those yet, but to see him connect, especially with, you know, how middling really it seems like a lot of the Crew's corners had been, you know, especially some last year and for some spans this year, to see him connect a couple times now, actually Frederico Higuain did
for the first Sauro header, but for him on this other one, and especially for a team that hasn't scored a great amount of goals, let alone from the run of play, to be able to, you know, take advantage of that weapon and for him to find Sauro there, I'll take it.
I'm going to give Pedro a 7. Sorry, knocked my mic there. There's some really good improvement that he's doing from game to game. And, you know, it was nice to hear the Nordic yell his name a few times. That means that, you know, he's doing something right in their eyes, which is, you know, considering his reputation, is kind of tough sometimes. But, yeah, he had a couple of really good shots. I'm starting to see his communication with Higuain come back like it was when he played,
yeah, when
he came in the, yeah, when he
yeah.
first got here. I'm starting to see some of that come back. And so I don't know where the there was a loss in the last like year and a half or whatever, but that's good to see that come back, because when they're both on, they're both really good and they're able to play off of each other quite well. And I want to see more of that.
Well, for me, seeing any dead ball situation go as well as that one, that goes a long way for me, because I get very frustrated by wasted dead ball situations, mm-hmm. and that's any level of soccer. And you see it in the Premier League. You see it in all the top leagues in the world. You always feel like there, so many balls are overstruck, you know, and to have that kind of touch, that goes a long way for me. So I want to see more of that, definitely. Nick gave Santos a 7. How about Higuain? I saw a couple of back heels, at least two. Bam, bam, one right after the other. Those have become something to expect.
Well, I thought, you know, I know I was talking about the pressing game earlier, and I thought that he handled that really well. There were a couple times where he was being pressed by two or three guys, and he would just get swarmed. And it wasn't that he would play kind of a forced pass. He would get around the guys who were coming at him and then play the smart ball. So I was really impressed with him. I don't think that we were able to generate much in terms of offense. I think a lot of that had to do with Zardes, who I thought had a poor game. We'll talk about that later. But I'm gonna give Higuain a 7. I think I thought he did well with what he had, but there were a lot of missed chances that could have been goals.
7's good for me.
Same here.
And a 7.5 from Nick. Robinho with his inaugural start with Columbus Crew on Saturday, which caught some by surprise. We were wondering last week if perhaps Caleb Porter would consider that after Justin Meerham's struggles the first two games, especially against New England. That's the way he went, and was it worth it?
I think it was absolutely worth it. I think it took guts from Porter to do that, especially given that it's Meerham that you're benching. I'm not sure how well Justin Meerham is taking that. That'll be interesting to kind of watch what his mood is if this becomes a regular thing, because I know he came back to Columbus to play. But I thought Robinho earned that spot 100%. He's a young kid, and he doesn't look it. I think it's kind of in the similar vein with Arturo, where you can tell that there's still work to be done in the game, but it's less work than you would expect for someone who's his age. He was on the same page with Higuain almost all game. I thought he created a lot of dangerous chances, some of which were wasted. But I think if you have him on the field with an informed Jossy Zardes, there are going to be goals. He is incredibly dangerous, and he was making some of those defenders look like idiots out there. So 7.5.
Yeah, I'll go with 7.5 for Robinho as well. You look at Caleb Porter, and he said the decision, you know, it wasn't just about Justin Meerham. This was also about the sort of game that he wanted to play against this Dallas team, what Robinho brings to this team, that speed element that you don't see. But I liked seeing – you saw from him kind of what you used to see in kind of a vintage or in his prime Justin Meerham, where there are a couple times where he finds himself – in the box and doesn't really have a good opportunity, but manages to find a way to play himself out of it, play himself out of trouble, get a ball over to Pedro to get a shot, you know, get a ball up to Pipe Higuain, find a way to find an opening and get a shot in there. And you look at, for a guy playing probably the coldest game. We remember when Artur played his first game in Columbus, that game coming on as a sub in Chicago or against Chicago, and you know how that seemed like a bit of an adjustment. This must have been the same thing, I think, for him, even though you know he did get the time in late as a sub in the opener. But to start out here, to have you know any of the nerves or anything that he was able to work through and really produce and show something that I think Crew fans should be very excited about. 7.5.
I'm going to give him a 7. I think, once again, there's still adjustment. I think what we see here, and maybe what we see throughout the rest of the season, is how Caleb utilizes Justin and Rubinho, and Pedro, for that matter, and when Nico Hansen, when he comes back. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at, does he go with the hot hand? Does he go with a strategy of game tactic? Does he go with whatever? But I think this was a good game to start and see what Rubinho can do. And obviously next week, with Justin being out on international duty, we're probably going to see him again. I don't know why probably. There's nobody else that can go over there, other than Hector Jimenez maybe. But, you know, we're probably going to see him again in Philadelphia. And that will be, you know, let's see what the improvement we see from there. But for his first ever, like, full-on game, you know, from start to getting subbed out, it's pretty good.
Well, at least he'll have that warm Philadelphia weather and those warm Philadelphia fans to look forward to on Saturday. And we made
Watch
mention.
Watch out for batteries.
Yeah, good people there in Philadelphia. Finally, and we're not going to do the subs. They didn't really play enough to and Nick didn't even give them a grade because they weren't on the field long enough. But we made mention, and not necessarily positively, of Jossie Zardes' play on Saturday. And the game didn't find him, and he didn't find the game, I guess.
Yeah, he was isolated for large stretches of that game. Couldn't find the ball. When he did find the ball in a halfway decent chance, he tended to miss it. So I'm going to give him a 5. I thought he was poor. He is a quality player. He has a track record of scoring goals. So he's going to turn it around. But, yeah, it was an off game for him.
I'll go with a 6 for Jossie. I think he was poor, but I also think that this is a Dallas team that went out to try to shut down or at least minimize his impact, not let him be the one that beat them. But you do look at the opportunities he did have with those loose balls that he just skied. You just got to kick that one in the ground and know it's going to go in the net. Don't try to pick it out. So you might be able to talk me down, but I'll stick with 6.
I'm going to stick with 6 too, but I mean, yes, the one obvious chance that he skied the first half, you know, I understand that, but I think his role, as we had talked about previously, is changing with this team. And until we understand kind of what his role is, there was a couple of times where he pressed and got the rebound, but there was no help behind him that would come up to help him outlet the ball. So if you don't have anything of that, yeah, you're going to try to do more than you actually can. So no, I'll stick with a 6. I don't think he's losing form. I think his role is changing, and that in turn will change how he plays.
Well, I think we talked about this, if not last week, at some point that he's not the kind of guy that you're going to look to hold the ball up and relieve pressure for other players to be open. He's your home run hitter, and he went a lot of those guys strike out a lot of the time in baseball, and they're going to go 0 for 4, 0 for 5 some games. And then the next night, they're going to hit a couple of home runs. So if you don't get your dingers, that's okay. I mean, it's not a player that you look at for a high percentage. But he does have 2 goals this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And only Gaston Sarro has 2 goals, and everybody else doesn't have any. So I'm not worried about it. I think that guys in his position – his type of player, they're just going to have games like this. Mm. And I think you're right that Dallas, I mean, it's smart to game plan to try to keep him from being able to turn and shoot. I mean, it's pretty simple.
And if the team continues, like, where did that shot come from? It was because of Rubinho's shot earlier that Gonzalez had to save but couldn't hold on to. He had to rebound it. And Zardes was right there. So if you start at least getting shots from Rubinho, Pedro, from Harry, Just get shots. Pepper the goalie.
Yeah.
And then get the rebounds. And if you have a guy like Zardes, who is a home run hitter, you know, he's standing there, whether it's him or Higuain. Higuain also skied one that he could have shot on goal. Whether it's him or Higuain, if, as long as they're there waiting for those rebounds, you are going to score more goals than you're not.
Well, a lot of the job of a great striker is to score goals that aren't pretty, but they're just picking up the garbage. And that's not an accident. That's having a knowledge of where to put yourself in a position in front of the goal to be dangerous. They don't have to look pretty. He'll get it figured out. I'm not worried about it. It's just one game, and Nick gave him a 6 as well. He gave Caleb Porter a 9. We need to preview the Philadelphia game, and that's going to look a bit unusual because, as we mentioned, the lineup. But before we do that, I do want to go over the scores. I'll just, as we do every week, I'll just tick off the scores. If you have anything to add, if you saw any of the game, feel free to chime in. But if not, pass, and we'll move along, okay? Seattle 4 and Chicago 2 up in Chicago, an early start up there. I think they started at like 11:30 in the morning or something. Maybe it's because of all the madness from St. Patrick's weekend. If you followed that, there were people climbing trees and falling out of them in Grant Park. So nice. They probably wanted to get that match out of the way early.
And the Big Ten basketball tournament was going on at the same time, too.
Yeah. So another less than impressive scoreline for Chicago Fire, Seattle 4 and Chicago 2. Any thoughts? Anybody see it? No?
No idea the game even happened.
All right. Fair enough.
Houston, there are certain joys about Chicago losing, regardless of where they are in the standings.
It's just comforting to know that they lost. Houston 3, Vancouver 2. Vancouver falling towards the bottom of the West. Red Bulls 4, San Jose 1. I think that San Jose club is really bad.
Yeah, they got this beautiful stadium and the ugliest soccer team in the history of America. So, yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's a lot of times I forget they're in the league because we only play them once a year. It's like, oh, yeah, they have a team in San Jose, and it's just not off to a good start.
Is Wondolowski still there? Does anybody know? Did he retire?
I think so. Always just, again.
Yeah.
Montreal 3 and Orlando 1. That's another fun scoreline, I guess. Orlando is kind of annoying, so anything?
No.
Nah. Man.
How about this one? Maybe this will spark your interest. DC 5, Real Salt Lake 0. And Rooney came up big, huh?
Only has one more goal than Gaston Saro.
Good point. Good point. But he's still got some game. He just needs to play and not have any downtime, because when he has downtime, he gets in trouble.
Yeah, got that.
Did he get into trouble on a plane in the off season or something?
If any, yeah, he did. he was drunk and swearing and got detained and had to pay a large fine. And this was in the late part of last season, but then they didn't
reveal it until
like January. They just like dropped it on like a Friday night. We're like, oh, hey, by
Friday
the way,
news
he
dump.
Got arrested.
That's an impressive scoreline for DC, who joined Columbus Crew in first place, top the table in the East.
Yeah, and I was so wrong about Wayne Rooney. I remember when he signed for DC, and I said that he was fat and lazy and that he was never going to score any goals, and I was wrong. So, yeah.
It's big of you to admit that.
Still doesn't have hair half as good as Saro, even with the new hair, the hair plugs they put into him. Gaston Saro, one fewer goal, way better hair.
Yeah. Do you think that they have a trainer who only has to look after his plugs?
Probably, but obviously they don't have a trainer that needs to make sure that he stays sober.
Well, they can't watch him 24 hours a day. It's fun having him in the league, though, I think, because he's a fun guy to follow. I wish he played the West at least.
Yeah.
But he's still, he's a fun guy to have around.
Hey, he could still end up on LA Galaxy by the end of this year, Brian. Don't give up hope.
LA Galaxy 3, Minnesota 2. Nothing?
I don't care.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. Atlanta 1, Philadelphia 1. We're playing Philadelphia on Saturday. Atlanta off to a stumbling start, as we see in this league. You win the cup, and then you just, nah.
They're already calling for the guy's head.
That's outstanding.
Frank DeBoer is not having a good time, but the highlight of the weekend.
Oh my God,
you need to look up the goal that Philadelphia scored, because Brad Gazan has like a brain fart as the ball is coming at him, and he just stands there and it slowly creeps across the line. It is a goal that a 10-year-old would have stopped, and Brad Gazan, former national team,
play that back for me again,
he just doesn't it's, I don't know how, it's like he has, his brain freezes for a second. Like, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It's
he just fell over backwards. It's like someone shot him.
It's truly bizarre.
It's so good. Oh my God.
It's one of those things that only happens in Major League Soccer. He just
fell over backwards on his backside.
You can like see that he, I think he had all of his weight on his left foot and then it heads right. And then he doesn't realize that it's heading right until the ball is within like a close enough range that he can't get down. So he just like falls back.
So I guess Columbus Crew needs to watch out for that.
Yeah.
On Saturday in Philadelphia, that's not the most.
Thankfully,
impressive
we won't have Zach Steffen to have to worry about that possibly happening to him.
Yeah, Joe Bendick makes that save, so we're good. Don't worry.
I think anybody makes that save. Yeah. I'm not sure. He looks silly, no question about that. Yeah, check out that.
You know what that looked like? You know when you have like a statue that's certain position and positioned in a certain way, and then you kind of poke it and it falls backwards.
Right.
That's exactly what that looked like.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, that guy, Guzan looked like some of the drunks I saw on video up in Chicago this weekend celebrating St. Patrick's Day. I swear to God, I saw a picture of a guy in one of those, those rotating doors where, keep walking. He had his head stuck and wedged in between two of the panes of glass, and he was just sleeping there.
Well, maybe Brad was enjoying those whatever $2.50 beers that they have at Mercedes-Benz Stadium or whatever. You know, maybe he was celebrating early. Who knows? Who knows?
I do think that we need to do a road trip to Atlanta, if for no other reason than the reasonably priced concessions.
Yes. Yep. I agree.
Toronto, just what we would spend on concessions would be enough to cover the game.
Absolutely.
And the trip.
Yeah. We could write it off, can't we? Toronto 3 and New England 2.
Toronto's back, baby.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No. No, they're not.
Haven't they won 3 in a row? Or have they won 2 in a row?
I think they've got... Do they have... I think they've got 2 wins, right?
I'm staying on my narrative here that they're still a dumpster fire and that the wheels are going to fall off
but
they're going to miss the playoffs.
But Jozy Altidore is back.
Yeah, he is.
Did he get a national team call-up?
He did not.
Well, that's too bad. How about Bradley? Are they finally done with
him? Did they call up Bradley? Oh, God, I hope not.
I'm going to have to look that up.
All right, you look that up.
You're already on the interweb.
I bet Berhalter did. Oh, God.
Colorado 1 and Spulting 1. Nothing?
I've got nothing. I'm still focused on the fact that Michael Bradley might still be getting U.S. national team call-ups, and that makes me really sad.
And does anybody else care about Colorado and Kansas City?
Kansas City fans maybe and like the 10 Colorado fans.
And Kai Kamara.
Oh, yeah.
Kai is with Colorado now, right?
Yes.
Has he played how many more teams before he's played for all of them? Because they keep adding teams.
Oh, he's getting close.
Michael Bradley got the call up.
Why is he still playing? I don't get it. But, you know, I'm looking forward to my evening of booing him.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
That's always a good time. And finally, the stunner. FC Cincinnati 3, Portland 0 in the inaugural home debut at Nippert Stadium down there in Cincinnati. 3-0 against the defending Western champs. Is Cincinnati a team to be reckoned with?
No.
No?
I thought Portland were pathetic. It was some of the worst defending I've ever seen. And the Nippert turf was god-awful. I mean, it's giving New York City a run for their money in the absolute worst stadium in the league. They have lots of money. Please get new turf in that really old stadium until your new stadium is built. Please. It didn't even look good by turf standards. It was really ugly.
Okay.
But they had a lot of fans there. So they're winning the attendance race,
okay,
which is very important. I'm sure Don Garber will have a trophy for that soon.
Well, they can't fit as many people as they do in the Mercedes Enormo Dome. So Don Garber will still
Megatron's
have...
Megatron's butthole.
You know, God help Don Garber if the attendance ever drops below 30,000 on average, because it's like Don Garber attendance porn every Atlanta home game on Twitter.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't quite understand what the obsession is with attendance with Major League Soccer. I was thinking about this yesterday. I think it's because like American soccer fans are still pretty insecure about the league and about the future of the league, and so attendance is like a meter for whether or not the league is going to go bankrupt tomorrow. I don't think we need to even worry about it anymore. Maybe there are certain franchises that should be concerned, like if you're Chicago, maybe But even then, it's like you're just going to move downtown.
Some people would say if you're Columbus, but that's a whole different argument for a whole different day.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It's going to be fine.
I think it's the measuring stick for the casual fan that doesn't, know the difference between your first ever MLS game and teams that have been around the league or weather or, things like that.
But it's also like a U.S. soccer thing where they're saying, no, we don't need to grow the game. We're just going to charge $85 for the nosebleed seats at this meaningless friendly game in December. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
That's
our product just sells itself.
That needs a serious rethink.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right. People were commenting on that during the last duo of international friendlies for the U.S. national team, and I could not believe how much they were charging to get in.
Yeah.
And then they piss and moan about nobody showing up. It's like, I'm sorry. This team didn't qualify for the World Cup, and these games are practice games.
Yeah.
And you cannot charge $85 for the cheapest ticket. You can't do it. You got to get the kids in the door.
Yeah.
Families cannot afford to take their kids at that price. That sort of thinking permeates the way U.S. soccer thinks about everything in this country, and it's wrong and it needs to stop.
Yeah.
You've got to bring more people to the game. Don't expect them to just come to you,
And who's that going to? Because we sure know it's not going to pay the women. And you've got this, they make their money again. U.S. soccer makes money on every single soccer game that is viewed in the United States. And so they make their money. They know that you don't make your money off of gates, off of ticket sales. You make your money off of that TV deal and your sponsorships. So when you're raising them to those levels and making it that cost prohibitive, I mean, what do they expect?
Top tickets should be $35 and have some $10 tickets.
Yeah.
Is that extreme? I don't know.
Cincy has been able to kill it for the first few years because they didn't have to deal with MLS pricing.
Yeah. $2.94 per game season tickets for FC Cincinnati when they were in USL. And it's worked out very well
for
them.
Smart.
If I were U.S. soccer, I would give away 25% of the tickets every time to school kids who are in youth soccer programs. I would
especially
just give them
go to neighborhoods with disadvantaged kids, get them interested in the game because no matter where a kid is, if they're interested in playing sports, they have choices. And make soccer a choice and don't expect them to come to you.
Yeah.
And then we could get into how much it costs to have your kid in a club and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's a whole other. We don't have time to fix that.
It's a focus.
How did we get out on that tangent?
Yeah, related but unrelated.
Break now.
I'm honestly happy for FC Cincinnati. And don't at me. And here's why. I lived in Cincinnati for 9 years. Four various forms of soccer try to make it in Cincinnati, and they died a quick and miserable death in a city that has a lot of youth soccer. So I actually knew a lot of people that were at that game yesterday that are Cincinnati fans, that are people of Cincinnati that ultimately really kind of deserve that. Now, for asshole Cincinnati fans, I don't really care, but for the good people of Cincinnati that enjoys the game, good on you. It's about damn time you have a team that is worthy of being there and actually staying and has the money behind it.
Worthy of getting waxed by the crew every year.
Yes, I look forward to you getting waxed by the crew. That's true.
I want Hell Is Real to be a thing.
Oh my God. Yeah,
for it to be a thing, they have to be viable.
Yes. So. And a lot of people were saying, well, they were used as a leverage card when this whole Austin move thing was happening. I'm like, we theorized that they were used as a leverage card, but we also, many do, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're hoping that we both get to stay, Cincinnati comes to MLS and we stay in MLS so that we can have this Hell Is Real rivalry. Right? Yeah, I can't even say the word. But here we are. So good on you, FC Cincinnati. Good on you, Cincinnati fans. We look forward to crushing your heads in Hell Is Real. But yeah.
I want to see them crying into their Skyline Chili Bowl twice a year for the rest of eternity. I just want, tears. I want them to be miserable. But I want them to exist. But I really want them to be absolutely miserable. I hope they never win a game.
Co-signed.
Speaking of miserable people, let's talk about Philadelphia Union next.
There we go.
As the crew travel to that stadium that's kind of in a weird area of Philadelphia.
It's a bad area. Don't sugarcoat it.
All right.
And that's where they're going next. And it's Saturday night at 7:30. We'll preview the match and wrap up this week's edition of the Massive Report here at Hen Docks on High Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Hen Docks and the Massive Report. Bart, you got to talk about your bag.
That's right. Segment three, as we all know, is brought to you by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Tune in every Monday after every home game for the Drunken Cruiser postgame show only on GCG Bag TV. You can watch the Drunken Cruiser postgame show. It's got great commentary, you know, fan interviews after the game, immediate reactions. You love it. We love to see it. Every Monday after the home games, you can watch it on facebook.com/GCGBag96, or you can find a link on Twitter at GCGBag96. It's somewhere in the timeline. I don't know the YouTube thing because we don't have enough subscribers, so subscribe on YouTube as well. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Club, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing.
Thank you, Bart. Always like when you talk about your bag. It's awesome. We got a game this coming Saturday. We're actually under the lights in Philadelphia as we take on the Union. The Crew will be without some rather important players because when you have good players, they get called in to play for their national teams. So we already established that Zach Steffen, with a bit of a knee tweak, is not going to be with the U.S., but he's going to sit this Saturday as well as they try to make sure that they don't make that any worse. So we have to talk about goalkeeping. Will Trapp will be gone. Jossie Zardes, Justin Muram, and Waylon Francis will be gone as well. So the starting 11 is going to look a lot different. I think that's more important than talking about Philadelphia. So what do we think the starting 11 is going to look like, fellas?
Well, I think Joe Bendick's going to take over for Steffen. We're going to have Ricardo Clark taking over for Will Trapp. I think we're going to have Josh Williams taking over for Gaston Saro and Gaston Saro taking over for Jossie Zardes. He's already got two goals, so you might as well just throw him up there, right? Why not?
Josh Williams.
Okay. We got center back depth, right? No, but in all seriousness, I'm assuming that they are going to do something weird. And are we even going to play with a striker? You think they're going to put Williams up there, or
we do have Patrick Mullins?
Yeah, we could do that.
We do have JJ Williams. I mean,
yeah,
I would love to see Williams get a few minutes anyway.
Yep. Yeah,
I want to see what that whole thing is all about.
So. Yeah, Mullins with Williams coming off the bench could be interesting. I don't know. This is pure speculation on my part. I just wonder if we're going to go with some sort of weird strikerless formation where we have the wingers pushing forward or something strange like that. That'd be like a Barcelona type thing.
If we had like the Justin Muram / Ethan Finley of 2015,
yeah,
maybe.
But you got Rubinho. I mean, what if you played Rubinho at striker? I mean, there's just some,
I don't know.
Has he done that?
You need him at the wing.
I don't think so. But
he scored in the Carolina Challenge Cup.
Yeah.
But you got to play him on the wing because you don't have Muram.
Yeah.
And you don't really have much of a substitution there.
You got to find out what you've got in Mullins, too.
Yeah,
you look at how much this team, especially last year, also relied on Jossie Zardes, and heaven forbid something actually happened to him. I think that's also what you're looking at. You know, it'll be interesting. Obviously, I think Ricardo Clark's going to get the start for Will Trapp. But, we're all talking about what's life going to be like post-Zach Steffen. I think there's a chance we don't have Will Trapp at the end of this summer transfer window as well. And so, if we see Argudo perhaps maybe get some time in there. But this team also has to prepare at least, I think, for some time without Will Trapp. So it'll be good to, hopefully see whether you can rely on Ricardo Clark to finish the season or, whether you see Luis Argudo get in there. But I'd also like to make sure we see some, a different look, at least from some of these strikers up there, because you need to know that there's someone that you can at least plug in there, because if not, then we've got the same problem that we've been talking about on this for about, 3 years, the lack of striker depth.
I'm just really excited to see Joe Bendick. I have been watching him cross balls in to Steffen the first two games this season, because I'm in Nordica, and he always kind of crosses in from there. And he is maybe the most muscular person I've ever seen in my entire life. You know that fake muscle suit that the crew cat person wears all the time?
Yeah.
That's like Bendik, but it's real. Like, I feel like if I punched Bendik literally anywhere on his body,
so
I would break bones in my fist.
Than Stefan? Because Stefan is huge.
Yeah, no, I don't even know how to describe this, but he's like the human version of like a Clydesdale horse. Like he just looks like
he's very blocky.
Yeah,
I think that's what makes it feel like he's very like there's a lot of angles.
I feel
like it's not roundness, it's angleness.
A lot of thought.
I feel like if my car had a flat tire in the crew parking lot, I could like tweet at Joe Bendik and be like, "Can you please lift up my car so I can change the tire?" And he would just like come out and lift up my car.
Wow.
So I don't really. That's not game analysis.
That sounds like a feature for the podcast. We got to have him lift up your car out front here.
I feel like if he punches a ball clear on a corner kick, the ball is going to pop.
Wow.
I'm really excited about that. Yeah, I'm guessing it's gonna be Mullins, and I think you know give the old guy Clark another chance. Every time Ricardo Clark has played for the crew, I thought he has done a very solid.
Oh
job.
yeah. That neck. He looks like a Marine. He looks like a Marine.
Yeah, he
or like a Green Beret or something.
Yeah, he looks like he should. You know, he missed his calling as like a bare knuckle boxer or something like that. He is a tough dude.
Was he
John
in one of those?
Cena's little
was
brother.
He in one of those Rambo movies?
Yeah,
you know, from back in the day.
John Cena's little brother is actually a pretty good one. Yeah, he could be a professional wrestler when he retires.
Well, that's outstanding.
But he's got some clean sheets in him, I'm sure. So I'm excited to see that. And
All right.
I'm guessing it'll be Mullins.
Well, personnel is one thing, but tactics are another. How do you see Caleb Porter using the guys that he has, and how is he going to utilize them?
Well,
conservative game plan?
He's got one thing going for him, and that's that he's playing the Philadelphia Union. So I think I wouldn't be surprised. I think he goes and tries to – I think, you know, if he – maybe in other cases, if you had your choice starting five or starting 11. There you go. Had got a little hockey and soccer switched around. But if you had, you know, his top picks, maybe he even pushes a little bit more. I think right now you see him take an opportunistic pressing, you know, pressing against the Philadelphia team that last week had, I think, 25% possession against Atlanta. Ooh. And then, again, only tied that game because, you know, Brad Guzan had to bless all of us.
Yeah.
But so I think he's going to have this team, you know, kind of pressing and trying to, you know, maybe they try to dictate, but I think with the, you know, less personnel, you know, playing smart out the back and then pressing, trying to get a couple goals off the counter, that ruthless acceleration he keeps talking about.
Well, I'm looking at the table here, and Philadelphia is dead last in the East, not in the league. The West has their own problems, but they are dead last in the East with a draw and a couple of losses. They are going to be desperate, I would think. And that's one thing that
at home
can tilt the game in the other team's favor, certainly, is desperation and a home game. They have to win this game, or their season's going to very quickly be lost, which isn't surprising to any of the rest of us. But you know, so I expect them to come out with some effort. And we'll see. It'll be fun to watch. That's the way I look at it. I like seeing all these different guys come in and see what they can do. Next man in. That's the philosophy that you have to have. All right, let's have some scores here.
I'm going to say 1-1. I think that we're going to basically play the same formation that we have been playing all season. I think he's just going to give those guys a run out. I think we've put ourselves in a good enough position where if we drop points, it's not the end of the world. But I think missing the quality that we're going to be missing is going to be difficult, and I think we're going to get a point.
I'm going to go with 2-0. I think Gaston Sarro is going to overtake Jossie Zardes in the goal-scoring race for the group, picking up his third. And I'm going to throw one in there as well for the aforementioned Rubinho. But I think really this team is going to sink or swim with a performance from Frederico Higuain. And I think that's really going to be the key with everybody else that's out. He is going to set the tone, and I think the rest of the guys are going to follow wherever he's going.
I'm going to go with 2-1. Philadelphia is not one of those comfortable places for the crew to play at. same like Chicago. So I can see with our guys that are missing and with them being desperate, like you said, Brian, that they're going to try, that there's a chance that they might, you know, there's a chance they might dry up some points. But I can also see that Caleb Porter plans for that and, you know, sets his lineup accordingly. So, you know, we're going to see. But I think Lalas Abubakar starts at left back.
Really?
Yes, I do. And I think, you know, he tends to be a little aggressive, but if he's too aggressive, I think that if you want something more controlled, you see Josh Williams. But if you want a pure defender that's going to help not get pushed around, not that Josh would get pushed around because he's a, you know, big dude himself, mm-hmm. but I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Lalas Abubakar starts. I wouldn't be surprised to even maybe see Hector Jimenez start.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you not see Hector Jimenez with five regulars out? I guess one of them's, you know, your keeper.
Yeah, I think you keep Hector. I think you keep Hector Jimenez to spell out Rubinho. Mm-hmm. That would be the only reason I would see that. So, I think Caleb adjusts. We see what we have in the guys. You know, I don't want to say second string because none of those guys are really second string, but mm-hmm. you see what we have behind your starters and how much depth you actually really have.
Well, I want them to show like Red Bulls did with their depleted lineup in the opener. If we do that, then I think we'll have success. I like us 1-0. How about that? Another 1-0.
I like it.
And that's a wrap. Next week we'll have tickets to give away, right, Sam? Because the champion Atlanta is coming to town. Don Garber will be coming here in like a hovercraft or something to see the game.
And Darlington Nagby is going to try to just hide and stay and miss his flight and stick around.
Don Garber loves Atlanta United. So if there was any time for him to show his face back here in Columbus during the season, I guess this would be it. And then we'll see him again for MLS Cup. How about that? Bart, Sam, Alex, thank you so much, and thanks to 180 Property Development as well for their sponsorship of the Massive Report podcast. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. We are here at Hendox every Monday. Why not come and hang out? We'd love to have you. We're at Hendox on High. We'll be here next week talking about Atlanta United, talking about this Saturday's game against Philadelphia Union. And until then, thanks for listening to the Massive Report.